I feel a little bit different now that the storm has passed a few more hours. Not nearly as much debris on the roads. I didn't see a lot of Florida cars on the road this morning heading back. They were doing it in mass, I think, yesterday. And you see the traffic on I-26 going down back to Charleston as well. A lot of mm-hmm. people getting resituated. And I feel like I know that's still going on to some degree. But for those of us around here who were fortunate enough to miss most of the storm, I feel like now it's back to business as usual for a large part of us. Was just near campus yesterday, and it was like a ghost town in the morning. I guess they were still in the delay or right. whatever it was. There was a lot of leaves and branches everywhere, and you feel like, okay, now that we can move past that and welcome back the welcome distraction that is football and sports, and we can really get into it today. Looking forward to hearing what you think about college quarterbacks at this point. Obviously, the Gamecocks and Jake Bentley in a really good situation. Bentley, I was watching the SEC Network a little bit last night, and Jordan Rogers was on with our buddy Marcus Spears, and they were going back and forth about certain things. And one of the things they were talking about was Jake Bentley, and Rogers was like, slow, I guess they have a segment called Slow Your Roll, and he said, slow your roll on Bentley for Heisman. I'm like, what? No one's talking Bentley for Heisman. What are you making this up for television? There was actual conversation yesterday about Deebo Samuel being in that mix, and I think that's much more legitimate. But I bring that up to say that I don't think the most ardent Gamecock fan right now thinks that Jake Bentley is one of the top five quarterbacks in the country. Maybe top 10-ish, top 20-ish, I think you could start to put him in the conversation just through nine games in his career with the, I guess, addendum that, hey, man, he's got a chance to be as good as he wants to be.
Right.
Right. He can develop into a really, really elite-level quarterback just through nine games in his career. It's kind of a silly argument to pose. So we're going to ask you, as we sit here today, especially with Clemson taking on Heisman Trophy winner Lamar Jackson this week and Kentucky having beaten him at the end of their season last year, going to ask you who's the best college quarterback in the country. That'll be the Frank's Discount Tire poll question up and rolling at Tim Hill 107.5. When I say best college quarterback in the country, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Well, the first, and I'm serious about this, is the word college, because I think being a pro prospect, being the best college quarterback, means you're best for the college game and not right. being a pro prospect. Because I'll give
like
you
Troy Smith.
Well, yeah,
he's the best example.
Tim Tebow, I think, is another one. But because you're going to put out your poll question this morning, there's going to be a name on there that, in terms of pro prospects, I'll choose instantly. But in terms of,
and don't leave the people hanging. What's the name going to be?
Okay, have you already got the poll up? You ready?
I'm typing it right now.
Okay,
man.
All right.
It's
so
okay.
The poll
You're not
question is
anything.
Poll question is going to be which quarterback would you choose out of the four? And you're going to have Josh Rosen, Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson, and Sam Darnold. And if you're asking me for best pro prospect, I'd probably go Josh Rosen. I think Josh Rosen, you're going to put him. He is the typical, I think, NFL-type quarterback.
Yeah, I like how you say that, like you would be the only one. I think that is hands down, obviously. He's the prototypical guy, right? The prototypical
right.
pocket quarterback
that's
a taller dude that has a big arm.
And the way the NFL game is played.
Right, especially because you feel like they tried the 2.0 version, right? They've tried more of the spread option game, and Colin Kaepernick took a team to the Super Bowl, and we all know
Cam Newton doesn't
have a job now,
right?
But Cam Newton, you feel like could stay in the pocket. He still has a huge arm, and he adds mobility, but he doesn't have to be mobile.
Right.
He's still a huge guy who can gun it. And Kaepernick, not necessarily that type, and
I mean,
one of the reasons, not the reason, in my opinion, and most of us that have eyes and ears, that he doesn't have a job.
Well, you know, and look, here's another thing about what the NFL looks for in quarterback. I mean, just think about the last few quarterbacks we've seen drafted, going from Jared Goff mm-hmm. at Cal, Carson Wentz from
Pat Mahomes.
I mean, yeah, I mean, you think about guys who are true pocket pack. So I guess the next guy who I watched in week one, and I won't watch another snap probably this season unless they make it onto some kind of regular TV in a lineup where there's nothing else on, is Josh Allen at Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched him against Wisconsin, and he was not very impressive in that particular game. So they're looking for the pocket passers. With that being said, I'll have to kind of think about this, because I instantly narrow it down. And Sam Darnold was very good last week against Stanford. Started out, I think, 11 for either 10 for 10 or 11 for 11 or something like that, and was fantastic. But if you're asking me to pick right now, it's either got to be Baker Mayfield or Lamar Jackson. And it just seems to me like this was the first big game I've seen from against Ohio State was the first big game I've seen from Baker Mayfield in a big game setting. Right. It feels like in big game settings, he always gets crushed. So I'd actually probably go Lamar Jackson. I think the thing as we get closer to this Clemson-Louisville game, does Lamar Jackson have the weapons around him to beat Clemson on Saturday night? I think this is his least talented team out of the last couple. We'll see if Bobby Petrino can essentially outcoach Dabo Sweeney again, because the last 3 years, Louisville's had Clemson beaten and has absolutely blown it on the final possession at the end of the game, whether it's Petrino's fault or last year his wide receiver kind of losing track of where the first down marker was.
Clemson coming off 11 sacks against Auburn, too. Quite the challenge for Louisville. But on the other side of that thing, too, it looks like their offense not quite what it has been. I know they only scored 19 points against Auburn last year and 14 at home over the weekend. So that's certainly going to be in the conversation today. But best college quarterback in the country, I don't think Lamar Jackson gets enough credit for what he did last year winning the Heisman Trophy, because he finished a little flat for sure, didn't have a good final three games of the season. I think he's reestablished himself early on this year, but he'll still have to convince a lot of people, I think, this Saturday night. And he has the opportunity, he has the national platform, the spotlight will be on, that he really is the best college quarterback in the country. Looking forward to hearing from you. As we said, we're just getting warmed up here. We're coming off press conference day for Will Muschamp and company. One of the big guys for the Gamecocks, some interesting comments yesterday, Javon Kinlaw. We'll get into those. Hear from Jake Bentley, Bryson Allen Williams. They're all on the docket today. Looking forward to hearing from you as well.
You know, I told our guys in the locker room after the last ball game that our seniors haven't beaten these guys, and that's not something we need to allow to happen. And We'll certainly be focused on Kentucky this week and understand what's at stake. It's the SEC East. It's the home opener. So there's a lot of things. I think this, you know, last year, this is a football team that we could not stop the run last year. They bled us out in the fourth quarter, and we didn't run the ball effectively at all. So, good challenge for our guys this week.
Bill, I know we talked about it immediately after hearing the press conference, bringing that to you right here on 107.5 The Game when we were at Williams-Brice yesterday, but that's what really stuck out to me. I know it was in his opening comments, but not stopping the run. I don't think any football coach enjoys his team seeing his team do that. I think Will Muschamp is the first in line for the guy who hates it the most when his team can't do that, knowing his background as a defensive guy.
No, and that's frustrating. And you say that, I'm the only guy who might have been more agitated would have been Steve Spurrier, because that just meant he couldn't get the ball back to call ball plays.
He was mad at other people. I feel like Muschamp is mad at himself and his team. And that makes it even worse for him.
That's something that's been preached by Muschamp since he took the job. To win in the SEC, you have to stop the run and you have to run the football. And South Carolina, even last week, DeMarie Crockett's having a big day.
No doubt.
And,
he's leading the SEC in rushing, by the way.
In rewatching the game, the announcers late in the game were kind of talking about that, how Missouri was not patient enough to just stick with the run. And I think that's part of South Carolina's plan right now is, can you be patient enough to beat? I mean, you look back at Georgia last year, it wasn't pretty. Georgia's winning late in the game. It's that Hayden Hurst didn't field the punt. South Carolina was still down a touchdown. But Georgia stuck to what they did best. They ran the football that day, and I think they ran for 326 yards. It'll be interesting to see if Kentucky is willing to try and do that, because right now, South Carolina's defense is playing okay. I think statistics, given the amount of competition, the level of competition between a lot of teams, can be a little skewed. But South Carolina's been willing to give up the running game. Naheem Himes was on his way to a pretty big day against South Carolina. DeMarie Crockett was really on his way to a big day. We'll see this Saturday if Benny Snell Jr. is going to be in the same mold where he maybe is set to have a big day. I'm kind of interested to see that matchup of Kentucky's offensive line against South Carolina's defensive line. But I'll say, just in reading things and kind of going back over things, it looks like this is the weakest offensive line of the three, of the opening three that South Carolina's faced.
But you would have to throw Snell in the biggest slash strongest guy they faced as far as a running back. I feel like that's not something we see as much anymore in college football is the big running back. When the spread option game has spread things out and it's all about getting guys in space and having a run pass option, I feel like what Christian Okoye was the guy back in the day, the Nigerian nightmare for right. the Kansas City Chiefs. Who
Ron Dane kind of comes to mind.
Right. John Riggins was really the first guy for me.
Let me ask you, because Leonard Fournette was a big dude.
Guy.
I mean, when you it's say, true. When you, like, you know, I don't know what you're defining as a.
What I'm thinking of in my head is a guy who you know is going to pound you and is not necessarily a breakaway threat. Fournette was so good and could do so much. He could run you over, but he could also make you miss and then hit you up for the home run ball. Mm-hmm. I feel like the bigger backs, the way that I think about them, are not going to necessarily bust off a 60, 70, 80-yard touchdown run. They're just going to pound you 5, 8, 10 yards at a time and wear you down. Feel like that's what Snell did last year, and that matchup was a particularly bad one for the Gamecocks defense last year. But to a man, even Muschamp pointing out yesterday, fundamentally better, faster, stronger on defense this year, not afraid to put that out there going into this thing. And you feel like whatever NC State saw on film, whatever Missouri saw on film, didn't lead to them exploiting the Gamecock defense that much. I'm with you about Crockett on his way to a big day, but his backup wasn't. I mean, he's a good guy. He's a good runner too. Witter,
right.
Witter can run it. He ran for. I think they both ran for 80 plus yards against the Gamecocks in 2016 here at Williams-Brice. So it's not like they just didn't have anybody after Crockett. But the Gamecocks were able to certainly close down gaps and limit the running game in both games, really, that they played this season.
Well, for the South Carolina particular one, I feel like it had more to do with, the Missouri game. It had more to do with Missouri just saying, we're going to throw it. That's what our offense is. That's what we like to do. And you know what? We're just going to do that whether it's working or not. Now, Kentucky's going to come in here. Steven Johnson is a good quarterback. He is definitely the least capable of the three that South Carolina's faced, or the two, including right. him, that they've faced so far. So
agreed.
I think you're going to see a heavy dose of the run. That brings us around to a guy who yesterday spoke to the media and I think could have a big, big part in Saturday night's game in Javon Kinlaw.
Well, he already had a huge part in the last game, right? And just game number two of his Carolina career, he blocks a field goal, deflects a pass that leads to an interception. I think he knocked down another pass. I didn't see it happening that quickly because of the weight he came in at and the way that I heard coaches talking about him is the way that I feel like they talk about guys who aren't performing quite up to their expectations. They just don't want to call them out. They want to be patient with them, saying that he's doing everything we're asking of him. That's what we heard kind of in the preseason about Javon Kinlaw, and we're excited about his future. Not necessarily saying that, yeah, we can count on him to do what he needs to do right now, but he's a guy specifically they brought in to shore up things up the middle, to help the Gamecocks run defense. He's already proven through two games that he can play on the big boy level. We're going to see where he can play now in kind of game in, game out in the SEC and how that can possibly transform the Gamecock defense. That's a lot to put on one dude. I think Taylor Stallworth deserves a lot of credit, too.
Right.
He's a bit of a different player this year, being 100% healthy as opposed to battling an injury last year. We're going to see, but Javon Kinlaw's story is pretty tremendous, and he's a pretty entertaining guy when he talks about it. He did it yesterday. We'll let you hear some of those comments as we roll on this morning.
When I first came, you know, I was 340. Today I weighed 309. So, I mean, everything the staff and everybody has in place for me, you know, like conditioning wise, so it's really helped. And these past couple weeks I've been feeling my endurance and things going up. When I first came, I didn't have any confidence really because I was, you know, fat, chubby. I just felt like I couldn't play well. But now, like since I'm getting back to my kind of junior college weight, I feel like my confidence has been going up a lot more.
I can afford to eat a little bit more now, you know what I'm saying? They don't want me to lose too much weight.
Javon Kinlaw speaking yesterday at USC's media availability, coming off a big game against Missouri, blocked a field goal, deflected a pass that led to an interception. He's a junior college guy originally from Charleston. He says all of his family there in the Charleston area is okay because after the flooding, he hit the downtown area pretty good. He says, even though he's 309 right now, ideally he plays at 295. That's where he would like to be eventually. And he thinks that could get him to where he wants to go. Also, hearing more of his story, it's pretty incredible, Bill. I guess Will Muschamp and South Carolina came up with the junior college plan with him, and it happened at a good time in Kinlaw's life. He said he was going through some family issues and could have even been homeless at the time. And so he goes to junior college, works his way back to South Carolina, and now in game number two already, an immediate payoff for a guy who's obviously put in a bunch of hard work.
Well, let's go back to that for a minute. Remember...
Yeah, when he called him out.
Yeah.
He called out Muschamp and said that he was basically reopening his recruitment, right? And then Muschamp called out him and said he needs to understand how much we've done for him, or not treat us like we're just somebody else. That's that day on our show, we brought up, like, where does the loyalty lie in the recruiting process? Does it lie with the coaches and the players, or the school and the whole thing? Because it's a complicated issue, especially in this situation where a junior college is involved, a home state school is involved, and this is a high-level recruit that was decided between Southern Cal and the University of South Carolina.
Well, and that's,
amongst others.
That's, yeah, I mean, that goes back to what we're saying. And, you know, for him to say that, I think kind of validates what Will Muschamp was kind of saying, like, look, we really, and we don't know, who knows exactly what all Javon Kinlaw, I mean, I think his family knows, maybe some people close to him know what all he's referencing when he says that there was some other personal issues going on. And I think that's Will Muschamp's point, like, hey, you know, we kind of really, I think saving someone is a strong wordage there, but hey, we really kind of helped you in a major time of need. And then Javon Kinlaw, now I will say this, I know doing the signing day show that Wes Mitchell and I did after our show back on February, we interviewed Javon Kinlaw, and he was fantastic. And I mean, very open, very upfront about the recruiting process. And he's a great interview, very well-spoken young man. Look, you know, you get into that recruiting thing, let's be honest. Alabama starts recruiting you. Southern Cal starts recruiting you. It's recruiting for a reason. It's entirely different than being coached. And, you know, they're treating you like you're a gift to their program. Then they get you on there, and they're like, all right, now you're just another one of the 85 guys we got here. You need to go do what you got to do. But I think he got a little caught up in that. But certainly you're seeing a prospect that Will Muschamp and his staff wanted, and you're seeing his development. And whether you think it's happening quicker or not, I don't know. I'm probably with you. He arrived in June. That's what, 31 pounds essentially about is what he's saying, 340. From the beginning of June to the middle of September. I think if you do it right, that's really good. But then again, maybe getting him in a different strength and conditioning program, more of a nutrition program, can help do that. I think as the season goes, I mean, this is a kid who has 3 years left to play, or this year plus two more years. He's not your typical junior college recruit. I think this kid is going to make an impact at South Carolina on the defensive line and be the start of kind of them getting back to where they were in the days of the Clowney and the Suttons.
And man, that usually bugs me so much, especially with junior college guys, because I feel like a high percentage of them never live up to any kind of hype that we hear about them coming in. But since this guy's already done it in game number two, I feel like it's merited. We were talking about the situation with he and Muschamp. He commented on it yesterday. It seems like kind of all's well that ends well here.
I just thank him a whole lot, him and Coach Thompson. So I thank those guys a whole lot for what they did for me, and just made me feel like I was a part of something when I had nothing, you know. So it's really the only people there for me.
So that's probably a better sense of that whole situation now, I think we have, because of just when Muschamp came in, when Muschamp and company came in, and what they felt like they did for him at the time. And then now I understand, I think, a little bit more why Muschamp was willing to come out at the time.
Well, now remember, Muschamp didn't come out publicly. Everything was on Javon Kinlaw's side because Muschamp couldn't speak about him.
He was speaking for Muschamp. He basically said, I think, that he didn't like the way that Muschamp was talking to him, saying that he kind of owed South Carolina at the time. And when you have Southern Cal coming at you, Alabama coming at you, saying, hey, you don't owe them anything, come on, you're your own man, you have to do what's best for you. I understand how it can come across that way, but clearly it worked out well for both parties, seemingly, in this instance, and now it's working out well for the Gamecocks on the field, because we're talking about he's a huge cog in the Gamecock defense. Bryson Allen Williams talking yesterday, saying that Kinlaw's one leg is like two of his legs, and I mean, he is a different kind of dude in the middle there, and you're right, that's what you have to have in the SEC. You have to have difference makers, not at just one position on the field, but at multiple positions. And that's why 2010 through 2013 was so special for Gamecock football. It wasn't just a Marcus Lattimore or a Connor Shaw or a Jadeveon Clowney. It was the combination of all these dudes. Alshon Jeffrey, you can go down the list. Stephon Gilmore. You have to have multiple guys. And Kinlaw seems to be a big piece. No pun intended there.
No, he certainly is. And I think you have to continue to put pieces, like you said, put pieces around him that can help. I don't know if Brad Johnson's gotten on the field this year. As the season starts to evolve, maybe some guys end up redshirting that initially people thought they were going to play. But Javon Kinlaw is a big kid. This coming weekend, you talk about running the football and stopping the run. I think Javon Kinlaw's got to play a part in this. Yorick Jones is a good player, but he's not Javon Kinlaw. I mean, there's guys who are just good players. They're just not as good as the next guy up.
Right.
And Javon Kinlaw's got an opportunity to be a pretty good player. That's pretty impressive, dropping a little over 30 pounds to get down to where he's at. And this is a guy that can kind of get in the middle. I know Lance Thompson and Will Muschamp, Travis Robinson, he'll get a double team on him, creating one-on-one situations for other defensive linemen. DJ Wonnum was able to get a sack late in the game when Kinlaw was in there because of a situation similar to that. Wonnum got in a one-on-one situation. So I'm kind of fascinated to see, again, there's a couple things this coming weekend as these freshmen integrate this football team. Shai Smith is the one that we talked about yesterday in the pass game. Do they continue to just run him on short routes so you just start to see him go downfield to catch passes? Because right now everything that Shai Smith has caught is just kind of out toward the sideline or on bubble screens. Same thing with Javon Kinlaw. Where do you see his snaps going? Does he increase to 25? Can he get to 30? I think that's maybe asking about as much as you can this year. But this is a kid that in the middle, especially when they play a power team like Arkansas or some of these other teams that want to run the football, can make a significant difference.
A little bit surprised looking through the SEC stats yesterday that the Gamecocks are tied for fourth in the conference with sacks this year. They only had one against Missouri. They had four in the first game, so they only have five. But that's best. That's good enough for fourth in the conference. LSU and Vanderbilt both have eight this season. They're tied for second behind Auburn, who has 10. And obviously, a team like Clemson with 11 sacks in one game is a real rarity, and that was one off their school record.
Fundamentally, we're much better up front, hand placement, pad level, a lot of those things. Playing blocks much better. I think we're a stronger front seven than we were a year ago. We got pushed around last year, and I think that we've tackled better.
I think Javon Kinlaw, one of the main reasons he can say the team is stronger in the front seven, Taylor Stallworth being healthy certainly helps, and just having a little bit more quality depth.
Well, anytime a coach says something like that, I think you naturally go, man, that previous strength and conditioning coach didn't know what he's doing, but this one we got here now, look at him, look at the improvement. But I do think to a certain extent Jeff Dillman, nothing against Joe Conley, but certainly Jeff Dillman had a lot more background resume experience than what Joe Conley had, being promoted from kind of the associate head strength and conditioning coach under Craig Fitzgerald, whereas Jeff Dillman had done it at other multiple colleges. I think it had been at Alabama or Auburn I know he's at Florida with Muschamp as well. But you can tell a difference, and it's not just 9 months of workouts as it was last year. Now you've got almost a full 21 months of workouts going back to January of 2016 and so forth and so on. You have guys like Taylor Stallworth who are healthy in the offseason, able to go through it. You've added some different pieces to the puzzle in Javon Kinlaw. You've had a guy like Dante Sawyer who was able to go through a full offseason with no shoulder injury and able to work out. So they should be stronger. Now, again, this will be another test on Saturday night. Can they line up and stop the run and create some pressure on a team that, as you mentioned yesterday after the press conference, statistically speaking, has not been very good so far this year?
Yeah, Alabama, part of that national championship team in 2016. Dillman was part of that staff, as well as a long time at Appalachian State, his alma mater, I believe, Louisiana Monroe, where he started. Pretty extensive resume. It started back in 2001, so more experience there for sure. We're back out to the Capital Hyundai, Capital Chevrolet phone lines this morning. Hank weighing in on the Gamecocks. Good morning, Hank.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I was calling, you were talking about the run defense. I think the run defense has been a good bit better this year. I think one of the things, looking at last week's game, you know, when you start off with five, you know, playing nickel, you know you're going to get some runs up front because you kind of outmanned up there in the box. But actually, the biggest thing about the run game this year is when the guys have gotten off the line, running backs, we've been able to make the tackle. and space. We had a couple, one or two missed ones last week. But we basically we made them make the tackle. And then I think the offense has helped the run game because what forced Missouri out of the run was the fact that we started scoring, which means you can't sit back and you can sit back. Georgia is really good at, if they're down, continuing to pound with the run, knowing that they're big enough to get it done. But teams like Missouri and even in state who want to throw the ball, or it's a good part of their offense, it's hard for them to do that when they get down because they're not going to have that patience. So I think the run game has stayed on schedule. And not only Kinlaw, but even if you look at that front line with Jones and those, they've been better about in the run game holding up and not getting pushed back and being able to slow these guys down so the linebackers can come up on them.
Thanks for the phone call, Hank. I agree with a lot of what you said there. If you can't make the play in your front seven, the back guy's got to make a tackle. And but I'm thinking about it now to last year, and I think towards the first two-thirds of the season, I felt like the Gamecock defense did that for the large part. They didn't do it against Mississippi State in the first half, but then they bounced back in the second half and played a lot better. And I guess Georgia is the game that you point to where that didn't happen very much. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you go down the line there. You can go Florida, Western Carolina, Clemson, and South Florida didn't play particularly well either. But early on, there was significant improvement in the defense last year from 2015 just by Will Muschamp and company coming in. And you could tell they were a much better coached group, I feel like. They just performed better. Maybe they were playing faster because it was a little less complicated or whatever it was. They were better last year for the most part, and then it kind of broke down towards the end. But through two games this year, we also have to keep in mind as well, I know sometimes we get blinded by results. The Gamecocks have won the two games, but they've given up more than 300 yards. The other team has put up more than 300 yards more than the Gamecocks in these games combined. That is an astounding number that does not compare to any other 2-0 team in the country right now. I think Southern Cal is the only other 2-0 team that's anywhere close, and they've only been outgained by 100 and some yards more.
Yeah, and look, you know, again, we'll see where these teams go. I mean, the Missouri offense, I think even go back to last year, had success yardage-wise,
right,
not
outgained
points, against other teams. I mean, even
the Gamecocks too.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, but you go back to Missouri last year, they could move the ball, scoring at times, it could become a problem. I think you look at, you know, I'm going back and look at the stat sheet from last year. That Kentucky game was game four. South Carolina goes into halftime with the lead 7-3. Kentucky kicks a field goal coming out of the half scores a touchdown on a 43-yard run by Boom Williams. Now, Boom Williams was a really good running back, and Muschamp talked about that last night or yesterday during his press conference. But last year, Kentucky had 50 runs, 216 yards, and then Benny Snell kind of putting having the game-winning touchdown, so to speak, with 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, a drive that was 11 plays, 65 yards, and Snell ran for 50 of the drive, 65 yards. I think part of that last year, Kentucky did just wear down the South Carolina defense, and the depth for South Carolina's defense maybe still lacking. But I do think on the defensive line front, you had a guy like Javon Kinlaw. I saw Aaron Sterling out there. You talk about the conditioning, a 99-play afternoon against NC State. I think if you're South Carolina, you kind of like where you're at defensively. Now it's a matter of trying to maybe change some of the schemes to not give up as many yards and give teams opportunities. South Carolina's been the beneficiary of Missouri missing a field goal and NC State missing a field goal. So, you know, some interesting things that are happening there. But I also just think the defensive scheme, the way – Will Muschamp and Travis Robinson are going to run this thing right now, does allow for other teams to have some success piling up yards, but not so much on points.
The Gamecocks 95th out of 128 teams right now, or out of 130 teams this year, in college football nationally in giving up yards per game at 463.5. Will Muschamp told us immediately after that Missouri game, though, don't get caught up in the stats. It's not about that, and you've mentioned it many times. You feel like part of the philosophy for the coaching staff this year and just tailoring their defensive scheme to what they have is allowing yards between the 20s, and then that red zone defense has been huge. The Gamecocks,
or forcing turnovers when the opportunity arises. I mean, that's, you know,
they've been able to do that, but a lot of coaches will tell you too that the turnover game eventually will even out. Sometimes you just get bit with turnovers on offense. Sometimes you are the recipient of some good bounces. I think Will Muschamp would probably argue that you got a coach being able to turn the ball over and being able to hold on to the ball. He says it's one, it's the number one tenet on the field in his football program is to protect the ball on offense and get it back on.
Well, that comes back to our quarterback conversation and where Jake Bentley's done so well through his 9-game career, 13 touchdowns, just 5 interceptions.
Mm-hmm. And only one this year was a glorified punt, basically, in the NC State game. Fortunately, we got 2 more hours of the show coming up. Gamecock Larry, our favorite 83-year-old caller, up next on the Capital Hyundai Capital Chevrolet phone lines, I'm sure with plenty to say about the Kentucky game. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Good morning again, kindly. First, I want to ask a question. I'll hang up and listen to you tell me who it is. Who's our backup center for the football team? And Gatoron, bad news. Tennessee Mike, good news, but I hate to say it. Bulldog Burt, I don't know who you're playing yet. I got to check you out. Gamecock, Barry, don't worry about it, buddy. We got it in the bag.
Wait. It's Wednesday. Wait, yeah, it's Wednesday. Don't give your picks now.
I'm not going to give them now, guy. I'm just saying, but don't worry. I'm going to tell you something.
You think he's going to pick Kentucky?
I told you last week our offense, our running game, was going to keep their defense off, their offense off the field. That's what we done. This week, yeah, look out. I ain't going to give no prediction, but I feel pretty good.
Okay, can you give me an explanation then, Gamecock Larry? Why in the world do you want to know who the backup punter is?
I just want to know because just in case. I ain't worried about quarterback.
Tim, he's a true fan.
I ain't worried about quarterback scoring nothing. It's okay. We can win with him, and we can win with Jake Bentley. As far as the best quarterback in college football, Baker Mayfield.
Okay.
And that's about all I got to say. Go Gamecocks. Talk to you Friday.
Okay. Gamecock Larry, ladies and gentlemen. Is he not going to come out and see us at Carolina Honda Powerhouse now?
Jen, can we get a replay of the audio? I feel like he called us chowderheads to start and then asked for the backup punter.
Okay, I'll listen to that.
Chowderheads?
Did you not catch the very... I don't think he did, but it definitely came across that way. And then he asked for the backup punter. And then I think he said Gator Ryan is in trouble. Tennessee Mike's okay.
Right. I think he's saying that Tennessee's going to win in Florida.
That's why I told him, don't give his picks. Like, I could decipher that. He's
okay. Just making sure.
I mean,
never know.
Although he could throw us a curve.
Right. Does that mean that
he could be like Corso? He could be setting everybody up.
That's a good point.
That he's going to take Florida and then just.
Does that mean he hates Butch Jones less than Jim McElwain? I think that's where we're going on that. Because he hates both Florida and Tennessee, and he's mentioned that many, many times on the program.
Yeah, but he's Dalton, George. I mean, he seems to be more anti-Tennessee.
That's
than
what
he
I
does
thought,
Florida.
Too.
Yeah.
Maybe he just has a good feeling about this, which is probably a good sign for Florida.
I think he's just setting us up. He's going to go back the other way. It's kind of like the old, he like when Corso grabs one mascot head, but then throws it across mm-hmm. the room and puts on the other one. I feel like that's what Gamecock Larry just did. That would be a segment. We had him in here, and we just gave him.
When you put on the Gamecock head every time, though, I mean, doesn't that lose its luster?
Yeah, you're just waiting for him to set it up. Like, what kind of props would he use? And
that'd be sweet.
I think you guys are making a little too much of that. There's a lot of liability involved.
That'd be more of my line of work. But yeah,
he just throws.
By the way, everyone is just waiting for us to say the backup punter, sir.
Oh,
please. Can you do it off memory?
It's Michael Allman.
Oh, impressive. I had to look it up in the notes. You knew it off the top of your
head. It was a punter battle. That's probably what you want to know. It was a punter competition during the preseason between Allman and Joseph Charlton.
Do you know what high school Joseph Charlton went through?
AC Florida.
Oh, look at this guy. He's a wealth of Gamecock information. If you need to know the backup punter, Bill Gunter is your guy. That's quite the sell. That's what you get when you listen to the first half of the program. You never know when Gamecock Larry calls up where we will go. What do you expect him to say Baker Mayfield, by the way? He said it emphatically, like he believed it.
I think he's not because he doesn't want to give Lamar Jackson a big ego boost by giving him his vote of confidence going into Clemson mm-hmm. week. I think he's trying to give Lamar Jackson almost like a chip on his shoulder. That this morning Lamar Jackson's waking up, somebody's going to tweet at him and say, Gamecock Larry taking Baker Mayfield over you, and that's going to put a chip on Lamar Jackson's shoulder this week to perform better against Clemson. So now, late in the game, Sure, an offensive lineman will just need to remind Lamar Jackson. I realize we're playing for a lot here on the line, but let's also remember Gamecock Larry kind of picking against you.
David Bates, no respect. Only way that Gamecock Larry can give away his pick is if someone translates for him. That's just rude. Christopher Morris with a good question involving our quarterback discussion about best college quarterback in the country. He says, where's the Mason Rudolph love?
That's a good question.
Rock Hill native, Oklahoma State.
There's not a lot I've been upset with, to be honest with you. There's some things that we certainly can, that he can do better and we can coach better, absolutely. You know, there's no doubt about that. So, and he'll be the first one to sit here and critique himself. But that's what really good players do. They critique themselves, and they always see room for improvement, and he certainly does as well. But I've been extremely pleased with how he's played. And he may miss a throw or two here or there, and I know that shocks everybody, but that does happen every now and then. And he'll make his throws.
Jake Bentley sitting right now, right in the middle of the SEC statistics at 201 yards passing per game, eighth in the SEC. Kentucky, by the way, just one spot above, basically the same, about 202 passing yards per game. And as they roll into Columbia there, Mason Rudolph, one of the best in the country, but not quite up there with UCLA's Josh Rosen and Baker Mayfield. He's put up a bunch of numbers as expected. They just haven't played anybody really yet. And I think that's why we had some feedback in the Shepherd's Glass inbox a little earlier asking why no Mason Rudolph love in today's poll question of best college quarterbacks in the country. Christopher hit us up with that question. I think it's because right now it's Tulsa and South Alabama, I believe, is Oklahoma.
No,
State.
I think right now, like in my opinion, we put Josh Rosen in over him because of the comeback. That's really it. Because
and also he's being billed. Josh Rosen is being billed as a top draft pick, one of the top three, or however you look at it. And it's not Mason Rudolph being plugged right in there at this point. Would you agree going into this year?
He's been talked about, but I agree. I think in terms of the Heisman, going into the season, Mason Rudolph probably got a little bit more attention than Josh Rosen. But again, Josh Rosen, who was out most of last year because of the injury, has, as you just said, has always been billed as the better pro prospect. I mean, even going into this year coming off of the injury, he was considered a top 10 prospect. And that's where you draw the line on this, because Rosen is considered the better pro prospect and is considered a top 10 pick going into this year. But going into this year, Mason Rudolph was getting more Heisman love because of the numbers he's put up through his career.
Right.
And I think when you talk about those guys, kind of what you said, Rosen has the big comeback on a Sunday night. Rudolph has played two games. I think both of them have been Friday night, if I remember. I know last week's was Friday night, and I'm 95% sure the week before was Friday night. So he's had this week, if it matters, he goes to Pittsburgh, and they play Pittsburgh, which is at least a living, breathing opponent, maybe because they did have to go to overtime to beat Youngstown State in week one and got demolished by Penn State.
But more of a brand name for certain than Tulsa and South Alabama in college football. Then the week after that is really when Rudolph gets the spotlight. TCU goes to Stillwater, and TCU beating Arkansas 28-7. They're ranked in the top 25 at number 20 right now. Oklahoma State ranked in the top 10. Mm-hmm. That will certainly be his chance. He has a marquee game in that game, be his chance to get more in the Heisman Trophy, best quarterback in the country conversation. They'll play Texas Tech and Baylor after that, so certainly get right into the teeth of their Big 12 schedule. It's just...
Wait, Texas Tech and Baylor?
Yeah, teeth? Not Baylor.
Baylor.
They're getting into their... all right, I'll take the teeth out. Okay. Their toothless part of the Big 12 schedule. Is that better?
Yeah.
I feel like the Big 12 this year is not going to help a lot of Heisman campaigns. What, Texas?
I agree.
I mean...
Baker Mayfield and...
Oklahoma State, Kansas there's not
State,
a lot of love.
Kansas State's not an attractive team. Bill Snyder's old, and people just don't really care to watch Kansas State. And so I'm with you on that, although Kansas State's a very good program. I mean, there's nothing wrong with what they've done there. Texas plays Southern Cal this weekend, and if Southern Cal blows them out of the water, then all of a sudden Texas is a non-entity for the remainder of the year.
Right.
Oklahoma and Oklahoma State are going to be fun to watch. I mean, that we're basically counting down. I think it's November 4th is when they're going to play Bedlam. And remember, the Big 12 is going to have a championship game this year. So in the fit, you're going to have, if it's Baker Mayfield or Mason Rudolph, because that's with the Big 12, it looks like where we're heading is for the first game on November 4th. And the second game in the Big 12 championship, which could be a nightmare scenario for the Big 12. If Oklahoma to run the table, beat Oklahoma State, and then Oklahoma State beat them in the rematch. I mean, talk about
themselves.
Knocking them out of the college football playoff. But I think that in terms of the Heisman, having that championship game could help one of those two guys not just get to New York, but maybe win the trophy when we get later. And Mason Rudolph's the kind of guy, again, because I'm with you, he got some Heisman attention, but it wasn't the same as some other people to start the season.
Also, he might get a little bit of a knock, too, probably unfairly, because Oklahoma State's receivers are so well thought of at this point. Mike Gundy has had that system up and running for a while. It's almost like you don't get as much credit as a guy like Josh Rosen, where I know UCLA's had some good quarterbacks recently, but you feel like, especially when you saw the comeback, and you feel like it was a lot due to him as opposed to giving credit elsewhere.
Well, I think, it was due to him, but I think a lot of people looked at it more and thought it was due to Kevin Sumlin, just like,
right,
let's just blame Sumlin.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's just blame him.
There's certainly,
which, by the way, John Chavis is a good defensive coordinator. Maybe somebody should have looked at John Chavis like, hey,
he got plenty of heat. Don't worry. Yeah. That's what they do at Texas A&M. Plenty of heat to go around in that program when they're not winning, for sure. Let's get back out to that Capital Hyundai Capital Chevrolet phone lines at 803-404-6100. Thomas from Swansea up next. Good morning, Thomas.
Hey, guys. Well, first of all, I'll say if the quarterback from Louisville, Lamar Jackson, is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? If he's able to rip up Clemson's defense this weekend, then he's the Heisman winner. I mean, I really do think Clemson has, if not the best, certainly one of the top two or three best defenses in the country. And then the other thing I just wanted to comment on real quickly, I'm not a huge fan of these, you know, specialty things like the blackout that we're going to do this upcoming Saturday. I know everybody wants to point to Carolina against Florida in 2001 and what a disaster that was, but we're not the only ones that have tried that. I mean, I look at Florida against us in 2010 with, I think they did a blue thing. That backfired against them. Georgia tried it, I think, against Auburn, and that didn't work out too well. It just seems as though it motivates the other team more than it helps the team that's trying to pull the stunt. So for me, it's Garnet game day. I still think we'll beat Kentucky. I certainly hope we do. But nonetheless, it scares me more than it does anything else because it seems to always backfire. I'll hang up and listen to your comments. But again, if the Louisville quarterback is able to rip up the Clemson defense, that's going to be a huge challenge. But if he does that, then in my opinion, unless he just stumbles along the way, the Heisman is his to lose again for the hopefully to win for the second year in a row.
Thomas,
y'all
before
have a good
you go,
day and go Gamecocks.
Thomas,
go ahead, buddy.
What's your Garnet clothing item that you have to wear? It sounds like you're particular to one.
Well, I wish I could describe it. I have
Oh no!
I actually have three. They're all Garnet, and they all have the block C in the middle. And the only time that I change it up is during baseball season, and with that, I use the SC logo that the baseball team uses. Otherwise, for basketball, football, whatever sporting events that I go to at Carolina, which I really love the women's basketball games, I'll just throw that out there. I'll always wear the same shirt and has the block C with the Gamecock in the middle,
okay,
unless it's baseball, and then it's just particular for the baseball because that's my favorite sport.
So you said you couldn't describe it, but you just gave me a shirt with a block C. There were three of them, so do you have three shirts in rotation and they're all Garnet?
Oh, that's a good question.
Well, yeah, that is a good question because I don't think my wife would let me out the house without washing them. So because I pretty much wear them all the time. You wouldn't miss me around town. I have my magnets on my car and my flags on my truck throughout the whole season until the baseball season is over with. And then I take them down and buy new ones for the next year.
Well done, Thomas.
All right.
Appreciate the phone call this morning, sir. I hear what he's saying. At least he walked that back a little bit. If Lamar Jackson has a good game, the Heisman is his to lose. He puts himself right back in the front runner seat. And again, we're talking about back-to-back Heismans, doing it for the first time since Archie Griffin. I guess he would be the only other guy to do back-to-back Heismans. We've seen it not work out well for guys like Tim Tebow.
Manziel.
Johnny Manziel in his second
Sam
season.
Sam Bradford.
Yes. And
I think Bradford won his second year.
Playing Clemson right now, coming off the game they're coming off of, I guess you could look at it two ways. It's a really good opportunity to put himself right back in there and show that he is a Heisman Trophy worthy guy back to back, or they just had 11 sacks against Auburn. It's going to be really tough.
Well, Where do I start? Let's go with the Heisman thing.
Let's go with the Heisman thing first.
Okay. One game is not going to make the difference because Lamar Jackson had a really good game against Clemson in a loss last year.
But he won the Heisman Trophy last year.
That's what I'm saying. One game, but he lost. So it's not like he ripped up Clemson's defense pretty good last year.
What you're saying
and
is
still won the Heisman despite a loss. So even if he does that, but he also had other games which were very good and also. But he had some really bad games down the stretch, including that Kentucky game and still won it. So,
but will you agree that Lamar Jackson has to play well this Saturday to win a second straight Heisman?
No. He could have one bad game, and he's still got other games in front of him, and he has a chance. And besides, it also is who establishes themselves. I think Baker Mayfield's in the front, is the front runner right now. Because he's had the big game against Ohio State, and I think that because of what you just said, Baker Mayfield's going to continue to put up big numbers to maybe establish himself. But Lamar Jackson's competition last year, Leonard Fournette, and even Christian McCaffrey got hurt, right. kind of knocked out.
It was crazy. I think you're making the case for me that he does have to play well against Clemson
to win the Heisman Trophy this year. I think there's too many variables there. Too many variables.
To me, there are too many other good quarterbacks out there that are going to take control of this thing, and because of the precedent, too, that we don't see back-to-back Heisman winners.
Think about the way Deshaun Watson finished his season and the way Lamar Jackson finished his.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who would have you chosen based on the ending, based on the month of November?
You have to choose Deshaun Watson, but it wasn't based
on November,
on that.
That's what I'm saying. So one game in.
But you're making my case for me. Because Lamar Jackson played so well early, he cruised to it. That's why I think it's that much more important for him to play well against Clemson in September.
He does need to play well, but I don't think that this game will define his Heisman campaign this year. There's too many other games. Number two, now I have a new question. That caller said he had three shirts. He said he has. So, new home game, do you have to buy a new shirt every year?
Have a lot more than three.
He
shirts.
Said he's got three.
Buys new flags.
But that made me wonder, and also maybe like, is that a tradition? Do you have to new season because you see these people that come out with the new gear?
You got to have that new flag smell, man.
New flag smell is quite important. That. I do totally agree. New magnet smell.
By the way, sir, one thing I did not mention about my trip to Missouri over the weekend. I don't know if you caught this on the television broadcast of the game just before opening kickoff. What do you hear there at Faro Field / Memorial Stadium?
Welcome to my.
That's what they played right before opening kickoff.
Oh, I thought you were going to say a mooing cow or something.
That would be weird for a Tiger stadium.
I know, but just since it was in the Midwest.
How many football games you've been to?
Okay.
How many times you've been in a stadium you heard a mooing cow?
What if that was like the...
Instead just a little slam.
There is a rooster crow at Williams-Brice Stadium often.
Well, it does fit, at least. I can understand where you're going with that. Like, as you were saying, a mooing cow.
Why didn't Cal ever catch on for a mascot? Is it just not, fierce enough?
I guess. Tips over easy? I don't know. Yeah.
Derek, you've been cow tipping, just, I get.
Have you? Whoa.
No.
What?
No, she's been cow tipping. She just doesn't want to go down this
No, because there's
path.
There's
this
whoa,
muddy
whoa, whoa.
Path.
Wait, we have to clarify this.
I have not. No.
You're not buying
I call shenanigans.
How did you grow up on a farm in Illinois and not go cow tipping?
Well, we were grain farmers. We had friends that we did other things.
Maybe she's been cow tipping, she just doesn't remember it because to go cow tipping, I think you have to get to a point where you don't remember much.
You know, I've heard.
Wait a second. Now I have another question.
Oh,
Bill Gunter, have you been cow?
Nah.
Are you sure? Lacey you seem didn't. To know a lot about cow tipping.
I know you're supposed to stun them with a flashlight.
What? Wait, I'm sorry.
See, I didn't know that.
That's what I've heard. Is that you're
that's
supposed
what you've
to,
heard?
Like, flashlight in the eyes to stun them, and they lock up or something, and then.
All right, let's
get the poll question. Getting to the fundamentals of cow tipping. It's what we do here on the
program. New poll question here that's going to come out here in a few minutes. Do you believe has Jen Jensen been cow tipping?
Okay, I'm going to vote yes, clearly on that. You have to use a what to what? Who's the best college quarterback in the country is the Frank's Discount Tire poll question at Tim Hill 107.5, where you can officially vote on Twitter. 128 votes in through a couple of hours this morning. Right now, Lamar Jackson running away with things. Baker Mayfield in a solid second place. Sam Darnold from Southern Cal in third. And UCLA's Josh Rosen in fourth place. Did get a write-in vote for Oklahoma State's Mason Rudolph, Rock Hill's making Mason Rudolph might be more of the reason why we put that one in there, or that was mentioned. Also, speaking of Rock Hill, met a guy from Rock Hill who's a Gamecock fan out in the Missouri game. He went to grad school at Northwestern and has been out in the Midwest ever since, so he was happy to see the Gamecocks come to Mizzou. Recently moved from Chicago to St. Louis, and just says, man, it's just different out that way when it comes to football tailgating. He figured that out real quick in grad school when he was at Northwestern there in Chicago. Noon game. Buddy said they're getting together before the game to tailgate. He said, all right, man, that's going to have to be really early. What do you think? 6, 7? They're like, 11. We'll get together about 11 o'clock an hour before the game. And that's much more of the attitude that I saw, I think, the environment around Missouri football. It's just not quite the SEC. Not quite
well,
what we're used to.
You know, and but a lot of people in South Bend, which look, at going to South Bend, going to Notre Dame to see a football game is kind of on my bucket list of items that I would like to accomplish.
I've seen the stadium, never seen a game there.
Yeah, I'd like to see the atmosphere. I mean, you go up there, you want to see the atmosphere, kind of like you were talking about with Missouri. You want to see the atmosphere around a stadium. And I think, like, if you're a Kentucky fan and you're coming into town this weekend for this game, you're going to see one of the better environments, not just you're going to see one of the better environments that South Carolina's had in the last 3 or 4 years for a football game. I think Saturday, I got to imagine people are planning to get out there pretty early. I know we'll be doing the pregame show. Heath Klein and I will be doing the pregame show around 2:30 over at Carolina Park. And
by the way, don't just drop that in there. That's 5 hours before game time that we start our pregame show. That shows you what kind of environment that is around.
And usually it's a good – people are streaming into to both the fairgrounds and Carolina Park at about that time to start their tailgating. So I'm imagining people will be coming in because that's one thing South Carolina fans are kind of known for is their tailgating and the ability to go out and make a party. Because let's be honest, 117 years of football hasn't always been very good. So you better learn how to make the pre and the post game a lot of fun. And South Carolina fans are really good at that. So with that in mind, I think the environment this Saturday around the stadium leading up to the game is going to be very lively. And when the team comes out for 2001, I got a feeling that's going to be one of the better openings you've seen in quite some time, not just because of the new pyrotechnics and everything. But going back to what you said, South Bend, a lot of people this past weekend were talking about how, I guess, Georgia fans going up and invading it, it was more of a southeastern college football feel than what is the typical Midwestern feel, which would, I guess, you would fit Missouri into.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about that. Just a different type of environment and not quite as festive, I think, is the best way to put that. And I mentioned the other day that the St. Louis Cardinals environment around there, it was more than the baseball game. It was at the excitement level or energy level that I have become accustomed to going to games around the SEC. And I think you can throw Clemson's football environment, by the way, in that whole Southeastern Conference type feel. I think anyone who's ever been to
Clemson,
a game up there.
Clemson, probably Virginia Tech, Florida State. And I've never been to Louisville, but just based on some people who went up there, I think 2 years ago for Clemson game, said Louisville can probably fit into that.
You excerpt Vandy out of that SEC-type environment because they don't have it. It used to be you could take Kentucky out of it as well. I think Mark Stoops has done a really good job at trying to create much more of the prototypical SEC program at Kentucky when it comes to football, because their fan base is so focused on the basketball, and it's just been different. It's a different type deal.
You know what? I think Vanderbilt, though, opposing fans might disagree with you, because I know when we go, when I like to go up to Vanderbilt,
you take over the whole stadium.
But you talk about the tailgating and everything, the atmosphere leading up to the game, because there's that hotel right outside the stadium where you're parking in the back lot. There's some little bars right around it. That's not counting if you want to just go down into Nashville, main drag of Nashville.
I'm not saying it's a bad trip. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that
the pregame atmosphere,
the Vandy home field, home environment isn't a typical SEC home football environment.
Like, I'll give you one of the pregame atmosphere places that I've been to that I think is wildly I just didn't enjoy it, and I've been multiple times, is Florida, because of the way they kind of tailgate. You're in people's yards, and it feels like it's a different kind of feel where I feel like you have a hard time kind of connecting with a lot of people around you. Auburn, I think the one time I was there, I was in a field, kind of behind one of the end zones. It was a lot of fun. Alabama's always been a lot of fun when I've been there. Nashville, again, for entirely different reasons. But, I mean, you talk about good game day atmosphere. I think that's what makes South Carolina so good is the ability to park around the stadium.
Yeah, Auburn's been the most similar to me that I've been to Williams-Brice. Even though it is on campus for the most part, there's plenty of room around there, I thought, where you can have a lot of space.
LSU, a couple times I've been there, because I think they just like, all right, wherever, just park wherever. Just
rules apply.
Yeah, it's just wherever your car can fit in and who cares. But I think this had a bit, the way Williams-Brice is set up, with having the fairgrounds and with Carolina Park, and then with having big lots around it where when you pull into your tailgate, you're surrounded by about 50 to 60 other people. You might not know them. There might be people across the parking lot you've never seen. Maybe some your kids are out there pegging some poor guy across the parking lot with their football, but it's a big crowd of people in a spot where, as opposed to Florida, and I know there are certain areas at Florida where you can do that, but it's more if you're in that neighborhood and you're parking in people's yards and – it's just kind of a – it was all, every time I've been to Florida, it's kind of a weird setup for a very fun tailgate.
And by the way, they are going to play that game, Tennessee, in Gainesville this weekend.
Yeah, for our seniors, you know, that's been a big deal for us. They haven't beat Kentucky, and, you know, that's really who I'm preparing for this week is for our seniors to you know, give them that win that they deserve.
I don't want to go out, you know, being 4-0. I mean, we're 0-4 against Kentucky. So, you know, we're talking about it. We're making sure that we're focused, making sure that we're locked in, making sure that we're dialed in, because this is a big game to us. But it's only the big game because it's the next game, man. Like I said, we're taking everything 1 week at a time. We're 0-0 right now in our eyes, and we just got to continue to work.
Bryson Allen Williams there, the senior outside linebacker slash defensive end, and sophomore quarterback Jake Bentley, giving a good representation, I think, of where this team is at going into the Kentucky game, especially for the older guys. One that has been starred on the calendar. You mentioned that you think Will Muschamp personally has had this one to look forward to for a while.
Well, and going back to what he said yesterday about not being able to stop the run last year late in the game.
He called last year's team soft.
Right.
And maybe the prime example is Benny Snell against the Gamecocks.
What I do wonder about that I think is a big concern for Saturday, Jake Bentley kind of admitting yesterday that he was maybe a little bit too excited, too hyped up for the Missouri game and overthrew some passes early on.
Mm-hmm.
You know early on in this game there's going to be an incredible environment. Just, you know, whoever gets the ball first, if South Carolina gets a stop, place is going to be roaring. If South Carolina gets the ball first, still going to be – you worry about not only Jake Bentley being a little bit too revved up, too excited, but I think the rest of the team coming out, they're going to have to find – that's, I think, going to be the key for both Will Muschamp and his coaching staff, is finding a way to keep this team even keel early on in the game and not riding the wave of emotions. Because I think – I just – maybe I'm going to be wrong, but I think the entire day – is really going to be one of the better environments we've seen for a South Carolina football game. I mean, you think about it, that 6-7 team, or 7-6 team 3 years ago, a lot of momentum was wiped away
immediately
by the Texas A&M game. It picked back up a little after the Georgia win, but then you lose to Missouri, and the fashion they did, and it was all gone. It was all gone. We didn't see any more environments like that the remainder of the year. Then the next year goes 3-9, and there was nothing like that. Then you follow that up last year, and I think people were happy and maybe optimistic, but we never really saw that kind of...
And Tennessee was pretty good.
I think tomorrow is...
Didn't get the Georgia home environment like usual because of storm concerns moving that to Sunday.
Yeah, that was supposed to be a night game. That was going to be a night game. But, yeah, I'm with you. I think that this environment tomorrow night, especially given that it's a team that South Carolina fans just feel... there's no way they should have lost three in a row to a chance for revenge, the team being 2-0. Do you feel if they win this game, based on where they sit, that they enter the top 25 next week?
No doubt. I mean, they're 27.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, that's the other thing.
In front of them is Tennessee and Florida. One of those teams is going to drop out.
True. So the opportunity to jump into the top 25, I don't know if people, given where the program was at in December of 2015 when Will Muschamp was hired, I don't know if people would have predicted 16 games into his tenure South Carolina could find its way into the rankings.
Yeah, and what will be the record there doing the math? 6-7 last year, they're 8-7 now, so he could possibly go 9-7 through 16 games after 3-9. I think people would have signed up for that.
So again, I think the excitement, so I do, going back to Jake Bentley and talking about winning one for the seniors, I think the big concern you have on Saturday night is the team coming out over-amped up, making a mistake, trying to make a play.
And when I hear that, I shake my head, too, because football is such a game of emotion. And a lot of times, the team that has more emotion, we hear it in bowl games all the time, right? The team that wants to be there more is going to win. So emotion is a good thing for the large part in football. The problem becomes, especially I think on defense, is when guys feel so much emotion, they feel like they can make the play, and their job is not necessarily to make the play on the ball.
Right.
I think that's where you have a lot of issues, and for quarterbacks in particularly, it's difficult. It's usually they throw high, right, because they have so much adrenaline going, and they want that too is a problem for especially quarterbacks who are known to put the ball in jeopardy. Maybe they try to plug it in a hole or two that they normally would not. We haven't really seen that from Jake Bentley. No. We've seen just some accuracy stuff, and I think too, sometimes you just miss throws. And you go back and, you know, on Tuesday after the Saturday game, you give an explanation for it. And maybe that's true. Maybe it's not. We'll see. To me, I'm interested to see what Carolina might do if they win the toss. They've been taking the ball. Maybe at this point, when we're talking about these emotions and we're talking about the crowd getting into it, maybe you switch and you play defense and you defer. But I'm guessing they would probably take the ball and try to march right down the field and see what happens.
They drove the ball on Missouri.
I think it'd be kind of dumb.
I think given Will Muschamp's mentality right now, I think Will Muschamp wants the ball.
Absolutely. Why wouldn't you want Deebo Samuel to have a chance to take the opening kick?
Yeah, I think you want the ball, and I think you want to get your offense on the field. If you can score first in that game and keep the crowd into it and put Kentucky in a hole, I think that's huge.
No doubt about that. At Tim Hill 107.5, the poll question today: who's the best college quarterback in the country? Lamar Jackson overwhelmingly winning this thing. 61% of today's Frank's Discount Tire poll question vote. In second place, Baker Mayfield from Oklahoma, a distant second place at 23% of the vote. Sam Darnold from Southern Cal in third, and Josh Rosen from UCLA in fourth. I think if we had asked this question differently, the order might be completely flipped.
Could be.
Who will be the best quarterback in the NFL from college right now? I think you might go Rosen, Darnold, Mayfield, and then Jackson in that order. We had another poll question today, Bill.
We did. There was a conversation earlier in the 8 o'clock hour that led us to believe Jen Jensen might not have been telling the truth on cow tipping. I posed the question, do you believe Jen Jensen when she says she's never been cow tipping before? There's still a few minutes left on this poll for you to weigh in, but so far 58% saying no, they do not believe Jen Jensen when she says she's never been cow tipping. So the listeners seeing right through your shenanigans. We know you've been out there attacking poor, defenseless cows.
Yeah, I think Jamie summed it up best. Like, what? You're way too much fun not to have ever gone cow tipping. So take it as a compliment.
I take it as a compliment.
But we still think you're a liar.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Early Game, 107.5 The Game.